want to thank our brother, Mr. Fitton, again for his words of welcome. We're glad to be here tonight. We want to acknowledge also our appreciation to your interim moderator, the Reverend Irwin, for his invitation to me to come along and to give a word of testimony. I was asking our brother how long he wanted me to take to give him a testimony, and he said to take as long as it need to take. Now, the Reverend Irwin said something about 20 minutes, but if I go on after that, I said to her brother, sure, you can preach on anyway, maybe to 9:30 or so, and he can keep on going. Nevertheless, we will endeavour to be brief, and we will stick to what Mr. Irwin has asked us to do. There's just one verse that I want to read to you. It's from the Psalm 66, and it is the verse 16. And the psalmist says here, in that Psalm 66, the verse 16, he says, come and hear, all ye that fear God, and I will declare what he has done for my soul. And I will declare what he has done for my soul. My testimony, I would have to say at the very beginning, is a very simple testimony. There's nothing very dramatic about it. I like to listen to testimonies, and oftentimes down through the years I heard men and women giving testimonies, and there was much in it that was very, very interesting and very dramatic and appealing. But I have to say, with regard to my own testimony, it is very plain. It's just about the grace of God in saving the soul of a very ordinary young fellow. When I was saved, the Lord in His mercy, when I was young, the Lord in His mercy saved me, and I'm enjoying the blessings of that salvation in my soul to this very day. Now, I was born into a Christian home just outside of Newry, on the south side of Newry, up in the country end of Newry. And my mother and my father were both saved. I've often said, with regard to my father, that he was the godliest man that I have ever known. And right down through the years, of course, seeing and listening to and hearing many men and seeing how they lived, and many of them living godly lives. But I have to say, if my father, living with him, not only on a Sunday, but what he was on a Sunday was what he was every day of the week. And I say again, he was the godliest man that I have ever known. And my mother was his equal in that particular way too. When I look back to those early days, we moved from the country down into the town of Newry to a new house, and a big, very big house, and we stayed there. But in those early days, and in my home, I just remember it as a very safe and contented and secure place to be. Family life was very quiet and secure, and everything about the house and about our home was nice and pleasant. We were taught the things of God, taught the Word of God, and taught it especially by example. And again, my father and my mother, the greatest example that we could ever have. But we were taught it also by the way of catechism. Now, our family was the Salvation Army family. Father belonged to the Salvation Army for many, many years. But he wanted his children, he wanted us to go to the Presbyterian Sunday School. And the reason for that was he wanted us to be taught the shorter catechism, because in his mind, in his opinion, the shorter catechism was the best summary of Christian doctrine and Christian biblical history that a young person could ever learn, could ever have. And that is the reason why we were sent there. And so we went to the Sunday school every Sabbath day right through those early years, and we were taught the catechism and the hymn and whatever was on the system for that particular year. At the end of the year, we were examined on that. People came from Belfast and would examine us. And I think the expectation was that with all of us, there were six in our family, two brothers and three sisters, With all of us, we were expected to do well, and I think I'm right in saying that every year we all got 100% in the Sunday school exam. That's nothing by way of boasting of what we were. That's to say how well we were taught at home and prepared for the Sunday school exam. And that continued on right throughout those early days. Went to the Sunday school, and then when I got a bit bigger, maybe I should say when I got a bit older, I never got that big, but when we got a bit older, then I would, after the Sunday school, we would go to church in the same church. The afternoon, when we were young, we went to the Salvation Army Sunday school. In the evening, we went at night time, we went to the Salvation Army gospel meeting. Sometimes after that, we went to what we called the half eight meeting. It was in the Christian Workers Union. And so that was how we spent our Sabbath day. And I hear young people saying, oh, they're bored, and older people saying, I don't go to church now, we find church boring. I have to say, I never found it boring. I love to go and to hear men preaching and to hear missionaries. To me, I really enjoyed that. But for all of that and for all the privileges that I had in those early years, I wasn't saved. I wasn't saved. But when I was about the age of 12, I joined a band, Silver Band, outside Newry, probably the best silver band in the country, a wee band called the Common Silver Band. It was a family band, and, well, I suppose that's what we were expected to do. My father was in that band away in his early years, and then when my brothers and I, we were old enough, we joined the band. And it was a family band, as I say, because I had two brothers in it with me, and I had quite a number of cousins in it and some uncles in it, and so it was made up of the Linden clan and other clans, other families, and it was a nice time to be, a nice place to be. And there I made my friends, and they were good friends. And in particular, I had three friends from the band that, well, we ran around together. And I say they were good friends. And we didn't smoke, and we didn't drink, and we didn't gamble. Our lives, comparatively speaking, would have been fairly clean lives. And so for those years then, from about 12 years on, that was my life. My life was the band. Monday night, Thursday night, band practice. Summertime, Friday night, band parades. Sunday afternoons, quite often, church parades. And that is how it went. I was still going to Sunday school. We went to Sunday school right on up into those years, teenage years. And then, of course, by that time, I was staying for church in the morning. So with all of our privileges and all the background that I had into those teenage years, I still wasn't saved. And I knew that I wasn't saved. But then when I was 16 years of age, I met Marion. Marion's my wife. And I met her also through the band, I suppose I could say. And I remember the church. It was a church parade, or a religious parade, one Sabbath afternoon. The band was playing at Alton F.A. Orange Hall. It was some sort of a commemoration service for those who were murdered by the IRA back then in 1922. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was connected to that. And so the band paraded through Newry to the Orange Hall, a couple of miles away, and then back through Newry again. And that afternoon, Marion was there with her friend to watch the parade. Her friend was keeping company with one of the lads that I was running around with out of the band. And so that is how I met Marion. I remember the date. It's easy to remember. And it's always good, young fellas, to remember dates in case your wife would ever say to you, can you tell me what date that was that we met, or whatever the case may be. But I remember the date well, for it was the last Sunday in February in 1963, the 28th of February, and it's easy to remember because that is the same date, the 28th of February, that the Scottish National Covenant was signed. Now, that was a wee bit earlier than I met Marion. It was signed way back in 1638. It was in 1963 that I met Marion. However, we became good friends, and although we were young, we were good friends. Marion was still at school at that particular time. She had been saved as a young girl, and I remember when I met her early on, realizing that her grandfather was a local preacher, belonged to the Baptist Church, and a godly man, and he knew my father very well. So I was thinking to myself, well, my father won't have any objections because he knows Jack White very well, and everything will be well. However, Marion was saved earlier before that as a young girl. Now, in those days, I was still attending church on Sunday morning in my own church in Uri. And then in the evening time, I went to the church that Marion went to, the Methodist church down in Warm Point. And the reason why I went to that church at night was if I wanted to see Marion, well, I had to go to church because Marion wasn't going to miss church just to see me. And so I went to church, and I would go there. And I remember oftentimes going there on a Sunday night. That was the routine. We went to church. But right until then, 16 years of age, 17 years of age, 18 years of age, I wasn't saved. With all of the background I had, I still wasn't saved. And I knew it. But I remember being at the church one night with Marion. And after the church was over, we were sitting in the car. And Marion asked me if I wouldn't like to be saved. Now, unknown to Marion and unknown to anyone, for I hadn't said anything at all, but for about 2 weeks, I was under terrible conviction of sin. So much so, I found it difficult to sleep and difficult even to get through the day at work. My whole mind was taken over by my sin and with a terrible fear of death. I was afraid of dying. And at night time, when I would be going to bed, the very last thing I asked the Lord for was not to let me die during the night, but let me live until the morning. And I was terrified of dying in my sin. How foolish I was now looking back when I could have had peace and asked the Lord to save me instead of asking the Lord to let me live. But I remember waking up even during the night, and, well, I had the understanding that when a person died, they went stiff, just to put it in that way. And I would wake up during the night in a very restless state, and I would move my legs and move my arms in case I was going stiff, in case I was dying. Such was the fear that was upon me that I would die in my sin and be lost eternally in hell. I knew the gospel, brought up with the gospel, and yet that is how I felt. And that night, unknown to Marion, she asked me about getting saved. And I said, of course, I did want to be saved. And that night, Marion, well, she spoke to me, but I knew the gospel. And that night, as best as I could, I remember trying to, in reverence to the Lord, at least trying to kneel or get that sort of a position in the car out of respect for the Lord, and I asked the Lord to save me. And it was an old first car I had, an old 830. I remember it well, an old rack of a car, but nevertheless it was the car that I got saved in. And I got saved that night, and I knew I was saved. I went home. Mother and father were in bed. I told them the next day about what I'd done, and I remember them saying they were glad. Now, they were not overly dramatic about it. My mother and father were not dramatic, and so they said they were glad, and I knew that they were glad, and so that was, they were the first ones that I told, and then I told the friends, the lads that I'd run around with. I expected them to say, well, cheerio, we don't want you. But they didn't do that, and that was accepted, and we continued on as good friends in the band, still good friends, even to this very day when we meet we can meet on that nice, friendly basis. And but however, the Lord did bring me new friends, and I made friends with other young people who were saved, and some of them from around Worm Point. And we would meet together in a house. There was a house that opened up to us, two young lads. Their mother and their father had a big enough house, and they would open it up to us once a week or so, and we would go there for wee Bible studies. Marianne's uncle taught us the wee Bible studies. We would do meetings together, and I remember going to do meetings in mission halls and things, places like that around the country. And there was a wee group, and they would sing. I was never allowed to sing in the group, I'd have to say. They had I think the rest of them in the group, they all sung. And Marianne's uncle, he was very diplomatic, and he would say, David, you just lead the meeting. And so I got the job of leading the meeting, and the group would sing. And that is the way it went. And perhaps the Lord in his mercy was preparing me to some extent to leading meetings and to taking part in the services like that. Those meetings continued, and the Lord certainly helped us, and the Lord did us good. Joined the Salvation Army, and there I learned how to do open airs, preach in open airs, and I enjoyed doing that sort of thing. My father was responsible for the open air services, and we had an open air on a Saturday night. Then we had an open air on a Sunday morning before the morning service. We had an open air in the afternoon. We had an open air again in, down in Uri before the evening service. So plenty of open air and plenty of open air preaching for a young fella, and plenty to do. I did the pubs on a Saturday night. That's going round the public houses selling the War Cry, the magazine of the Salvation Army. So I learned to be active, and I thank the Lord for that. However, the time came when I found it necessary to separate from the Salvation Army because of their engagement in ecumenical activities, and I could no longer remain there. And so I left the Salvation Army. I have to say I left it with the blessing of my father. He recognized that things were happening that I did not wish to be involved in. I remember those days. I wrote to the man who led the Salvation Army in Ireland and explained to him my unhappiness. I can't remember what I wrote, but the result of that was I was disciplined and I was put out of uniform, and for 6 weeks I wasn't allowed to take part in activities in the Salvation Army, allowed to attend the meetings. However, during that time, a young man from Warren Point, I called him Gordon Wilson, he invited me to the Free Presbyterian Church down in Kilkeel, and that was my first connection, really, with the Free Presbyterian Church. I have to say, Gordon, maybe about 3 weeks ago, it was the anniversary of his death. 40 years since Gordon was murdered by the IRA. He was a young policeman murdered there in Armagh. But he was the one who introduced me to the Free Presbyterian Church down in Kilkeel. I was in the church for a while there, had enjoyed the ministry and enjoyed the work, and I was there when the Lord called me into the work. I went into the Theological Hall in 1974 with our brother Wesley, I see here tonight, and we learned some things there. I have to say that our brother Madole taught me other things, really, which had nothing to do with theology at all. Nevertheless, I found them beneficial in that they lightened the burden of the lectures, and so our brother has been a good friend ever since, and it's nice to share fellowship with him tonight. We got out of the Theological Hall. We started the same day and got out the same day, and then I went to the church in Port Lanoan, and I remained there until I retired back in 2011. I was there for about 32 years. The poor people couldn't get rid of me, and you can imagine what it was like for them to be praying, Lord, get this man another call, and the Lord saying, no, you have to stay, you have to put up with him. And so it was, and they very graciously put up with me until I retired. And here I am today, retired way back in like 12 years, just now going into next month, retired 12 years. And I can say this to you people, that the Lord who saved me has graciously and wonderfully kept me and satisfied me. What satisfaction there is in loving the Lord and serving the Lord. And young people, I say to you tonight, I don't know what you imagine a satisfied life is made up of, made up of. But I can tell you this, if you love the Lord, if you're saved and you're obeying the Lord and you do what the Lord would have you to do. And I look back in my life and there's so many things I would love to have done better and love to have been better. But I have to say this, that every day the Lord has satisfied me. I had no need to add anything to what the Lord gave to me. He has given to me everything that I could ever want, and he has satisfied me absolutely abundantly. So what the Lord did for my soul way back then, when I was just 18, what the Lord did for me then, he has blessed me with that right through to this very day. And I'm still rejoicing in the Lord and all that the Lord has done. Sometimes I look at these young men like Mr. Fitton, and I think I would love to be young again and do it all over again and have plenty of time to preach. And I read the scriptures and I think, oh, I'd love to preach in that. And then, of course, I'm old and I know that I don't have the same opportunities. But I look to these young men and think, what a blessing they have ahead of them if they keep faithful to God and walk with the Lord and obey the Lord. What blessings there are for their souls. The Lord has blessed me. The Lord is good, and I trust that the Lord will take these few remarks and that he will use them even to those that are unsaved tonight. I would say to you, come to Christ, be saved. He will bless you. He'll save your soul and bring you to heaven. But I tell you this, before he brings you to heaven, he'll richly bless your soul. Get saved tonight. And if there's anyone tonight and you're backslidden and you're cold, then look to the Lord afresh and obey the leading of the Lord and have again that restoring of fellowship that's found in the Lord. Come to the Lord afresh tonight, and he will richly bless you as he restores you again to that fellowship with himself. And dear people of God, continue to rejoice and walk with him, and the Lord will richly do you good.